Hello and welcome to episode 35 of the Tech Reformation. I'm Ben.
I'm Craig.
And this is Tank.
So I have a story this week, and I'm going to make it as short as I can. But basically, my wife and I are in the process of looking for a new car to buy because one of our cars has done 229,000 kilometers. And so we're kind of thinking we want to replace it before it gets too crazy old. Ben's shaking his head. I don't know what that means.
I have no idea how much distance that is.
In miles. Just convert it for me on Google and then tell the listeners so they know. Sorry, I always forget that there's those differences that actually matter because people don't understand me. I figure because we're speaking English, everyone will understand. But anyway, we're looking for cars, and we have this thing called the RAA, which is like the National Road Service. You know, if you break down, they come and fix your car for you on the side of the road if you pay your subscription. So I'm a member with them. So I always, when I'm looking at buying cars, always get a vehicle inspection check, which costs $280. But they look over the whole car, look over absolutely everything, and they tell you anything that's even minor problems with it. So you have all the information about anything that could go wrong or whether or not it's green light or whatever to proceed with the purchase. So a couple of weeks ago, we found a car, really low Ks, looked really good, took it for a test drive, private sale. And my first question when I'm looking at a car is, has it ever been in an accident? So I asked the guy that, and he goes, well, I've owned it for about 5 years. I think the person who owned it before me, who only owned it for a year or two, had a little minor crash in a car park and did some damage to the front end, and it was cosmetic. They replaced the panel, and ever since then, nothing's happened with it. It's been perfectly fine. So I was like, okay, we'll take it for a drive, get a check done on it. So I got a check done on it later that week, and the guy was really helpful. He dropped it off to the place for me and everything at the right time and whatever. And then I get a call from the RAA, and they say, well, we'd like to be able to tell you. I can't remember exactly how they said it, but they basically said, look, the story is it was written off last year in the Northern Territory, which is another state, not the state that I live in, and it was a repairable write-off, and it has been repaired really, really badly, and the roof pillars and the roof itself are in terrible condition and underneath the outer paintwork. You really shouldn't buy it. So, on the one hand, $280 well spent. On the other hand, I was pretty frustrated that people aren't just honest about these things. it was in a crash. We got it fixed. He said, no, I've owned it for 5 years and it's been fine. No, you wrote it off last year. But anyway, so since then, we found another car, which we're pretty interested in, and it's in heaps better condition. And it turns out the people who own it are fellow believers, so that's been cool. I had a really good chat with the guy last night on the phone, and we just talked about everything, life, church, whatever, and sort of spoke for about 15 minutes about everything apart from the sale of the car that we're talking about. I thought that was kind of cool, but I just thought I'd tell a car story, seeing as how Tank's done a few and wanted to get in on that action.
Neato. Nice. Did you get the Carfax?
No. What does that mean?
They probably don't have that in Australia, do they?
What is it?
It's like this website where you can see the history of the car, all their accidents and tickets and stuff. Well, I don't know if you can see tickets, but everything that's happened with that VIN number, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, I think if you know the VIN number, I think you can do a search. But the RAA does that as part of their check anyway. So
that actually was my next question. Is VIN number even universal? Because, I mean, I don't know.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Well, it's Australia and America. I don't know if it's universal. I don't know if they have it in Malawi, but...
Yeah. Neat. Well, let's talk about the news this week. Now it's time for Tech You Should Know, the part of the show where we tell you 7 tech news stories from this week that we think deserve your attention. First up, Intel announces a slow departure from the PC industry, along with thousands of layoffs. In its first quarter earnings call, Intel announced that it would lay off up to 12,000 of its employees worldwide, in an effort to accelerate its evolution from a PC company to a company that powers the cloud and billions of smart connected devices.
That's huge.
That is a lot of people.
Well, it's also huge that they're getting out of that industry. But that is it. Yeah.
Yeah, that also.
12,000 is a lot of people. Like, Intel has for so long been so heavily integrated into PC parts and componentry and stuff. Yeah. So to have that pull out along with 12,000 people all at once is just a crazy shift. But yeah.
Intel will no longer be the smallest and most important parts of your computer.
So it's not making like even CPUs, right? Or is it not making anything? Or, I mean, is it not making full desktops, or is it not making parts even? Did it ever make full desktops?
The article mentions staff cuts, and it talks about earnings as well. It doesn't say specifically which parts of the industry they're pulling out of.
Hmm.
So, more on that as it develops. And as you can tell, it's the time of the year where we have our quarterly earnings calls from all the major public companies. So, next up, Apple has seen its revenues decline for the first time in 13 years. After staggering growth from iPhone sales and iPad sales and even MacBook computers, they have finally seen a downturn in quarterly earnings.
Do you think that's just because they've hit like a peak? Like they've just hit like a saturation point, I guess is what I'm saying. Like so many people now have iPhones. iPhones, is, you know, they still sell heaps, but things like that are kind of maybe slowing down because the initial buzz is over. I don't know. I just wonder if like, you know, or like some of that tech, well, for so long they've always been pushing the boundaries of what's possible. And it has felt to me like some of the, particularly in the phone space, things have slowed down a bit lately. Maybe.
Yeah. No, I mean, I definitely agree. I think there's a lot of people saying that we've reached peak Apple. Just for listeners' interest, Apple brought in $50.6 billion in revenue for the second quarter of 2016. That's the most recent quarter, which compares to $58 billion from the previous quarter. So, or from the previous period last year, sorry. Same period last year. So, it's interesting that they're still making $50 billion and yet they're not making as much profit, I guess, and people are making a big stink about it. Next up, again with Apple. Apple makes more money from its services than selling Macs. This is another first for the company. Their hardware sales typically had been the money generator, if you will. But now they're actually making more services from things like Apple Music and iCloud and the like than they are from selling their MacBook computers.
I wonder if it's going to shift its focus to the services.
I wouldn't be surprised. It seems to be the way of the big tech company to move to the cloud, if you will. Also this week, Comcast announces plans to buy DreamWorks Animation for $3.8 billion.
Wow. That's a lot of money.
I have nothing to say about this one except I love Comcast and I just started using their services. And anyone who has Comcast knows exactly what I mean.
So they're an ISP, right?
I'm sorry, what? Internet service provider? Yeah.
And they've bought DreamWorks? Like they've bought the company that makes Shrek and everything? That's pretty full on.
Yeah. So I believe they bought NBC Universal either last year or the year before that. So it's not totally out of left field.
Yeah.
Because they were already sort of going down this road. It seems like, you know, the folks who are at least tangentially related to content, like streaming content, are beginning to produce their own original content. And that's sort of the next play. If you will. So like Netflix makes their own shows, Amazon, Apple. I've heard rumors that Apple's going to get into making their own original TV series. So it's not super weird, but it is, I don't know. It's a lot of money and it is kind of odd that they would buy DreamWorks.
Yep.
So I was researching Intel a little bit on the side just to see some more of the details on that. Because like as far as CPUs go, I always hear Intel and AMD. I was like, they're getting rid of their CPUs? Like they're the main person. So from this article on PC World that I found, it's saying that they're just stopping motherboards, and that they will continue to send out CPUs, but they just won't make their Intel motherboard anymore because they can't keep up with people like Asus and others. So instead, they're going to switch to motherboards for Internet of Things. So very tiny motherboards, because they feel like not a lot of people are in that industry yet. So there's a little more detail on that.
Yeah, the Ars Technica article that we linked says that they've listed growth industries such as, quote, data center, Internet of Things, memory and connectivity businesses.
Hmm.
Oh, as well as growing client segments such as two-in-ones, gaming, and home gateways. So it's sort of a linear move, I guess.
Hmm.
Next up, Microsoft released WordFlow, a keyboard app for iPhone, which features a one-handed mode and custom backgrounds. So you can finally type with one thumb on your iPhone.
Are y'all going to try it?
I have tried it.
How is it?
Man, I like the idea, but there have not been any third-party keyboards for iPhone that I've felt like are snappy enough for the keyboard part of the phone. So like this is almost the main part of the phone, other than like making mm-hmm. phone calls. You know, and so it's like I need it to not, every time I load the keyboard, it can't sort of, you know, compile all the DLLs or whatever. That's not what's happening, but you get my point. It takes a while for it to spin up when you gotcha. First switch to it. And that's what kind of the experience I've seen with all of the keyboard third-party keyboards that I've tried. So I've just stuck kind of for the most part with the native one.
Hmm. Gotcha. I looked for it on Android and it wasn't there, so I haven't tried it.
Sad day. Yep. I bet there's probably some other alternatives.
Yeah, I have a different keyboard than the default one. It's called Flexi, but
I think I've heard of that. It's pretty good. it's not unlike Apple to see something like this if it does well and then totally rip it off in the next version of iOS. So it's possible they'll do something native that's similar.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
We will see.
For Apple people.
Yeah. Also this week, Uber is offering yacht rentals in Dubai because it's still a luxury product. Uber, the crowdsourcing car rental company, has decided to venture out into yacht rentals, specifically in Dubai. I don't know if the company's announced plans to move this yacht rental business to the States or to Australia, but it is pretty interesting how much they keep getting their hands into across the world.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Never heard anybody say, I want to go rent a yacht.
I bet it's a lot cheaper than owning one, though.
Yeah, probably so.
And finally this week, Google, Ford, and Uber just created a giant lobbying group for self-driving cars. Obviously, self-driving cars are all the rage these days. One of the up-and-coming technologies that we will probably see in our lifetime, hopefully in the next few years. And the big companies who have started in this industry have already begun lobbying, as it will be necessary to deal with the legislation issues involved when self-driving cars are actually a consumer thing.
Hmm. I didn't realize Ford was a player in the self-driving car space.
Yeah, I think some of the other, you know, the article mentions Volvo also, and then Lyft as well, which is another company like Uber. Some of the car companies have been doing a lot of research and trying to partner really with tech companies in developing their own self-driving cars. I guess they probably don't want to get replaced by Google and Apple when they come out with theirs.
Hmm.
And that's all the tech you should know this week. Now it's time for Tech You Should Use, the part of the show where we feature one technology and talk in detail about what it is and what it can do for you. This week, Tech You Should Use, the new Apple TV. We've talked about the new Apple TV on the show before, specifically in episode 4, back when it was announced, the Apple keynote, one of the Apple keynotes that year. I think it was last year. You can go back and listen to that if you're interested. We give a lot more detail about what it is. I thought it was one of the most interesting things they had announced in that particular keynote. I now have one, and it's great. I love it. I upgraded from a third gen to the new one, which is the fourth gen. And we'll talk a little bit more about it, but someone else on our squad just got one.
Yeah, I got one a couple of weeks ago, so we've had it. Yeah, I think we've had it for about a fortnight. And we're really enjoying it. I've never had one in the past. This is the first one I've ever owned. I've seen them before, like friends have had them and whatever, but I've always just kind of thought, why do I want that? And yeah, we picked up the one with storage. I think we got the 32 gig version.
That's what we have.
Which, yeah, I was totally hadn't done my research because I thought that the storage was for content, like you could store iTunes movies and stuff on there. And that's totally not what it's for. It's for apps only. Which I'm still kind of a little bit, I'm not disappointed, but I'm like, it would make sense to me that, you know, the movies that I've got on my laptop or my iPad that are a gig each, or 1.9 gig or something, for an iTunes movie, if I could store those on my Apple TV or at least some of them, then that would be kind of cool. But anyway, it has apps. So I quickly downloaded the Ligonier app, and Netflix and a bunch of others. And yeah, really enjoying it. Been watching a lot of Netflix shows because there's nothing on free-to-air TV that's worth watching. And my wife's on maternity leave now, so she's loving it because she can just go and watch, like catch-up TV heaps easily and whatever, for other, like some of the reality cooking shows and stuff that she enjoys. She watches them during the day while I'm at work so that I don't have to watch them when I get home at night, which is really nice of her.
Nice. So we end up watching them together. All-Star Academy, Chopped. People know what I'm talking about.
But the remote is the coolest thing. Like, I didn't really realize how cool it was until my sister-in-law stayed at our house last weekend. We were away, and she was looking after our dog. And she always gets confused about our TV system because we have a Belkin screencast, I think it is, that like makes our TV wireless to our Blu-ray player and stuff. So that can all be in another area. So it's all out of the way. And then it just kind of streams straight to the TV. Anyway, so I had to tell her which remotes were for which thing. So I actually drew a diagram, like I traced around each remote and said, this one does this. And trying to explain how to use the Apple TV remote, like there's a swipe area in the top third. There's only four buttons. This one, this is the on-off button, even though it doesn't have a power symbol on it. but the actual functionality of it is pretty cool. It does work really well.
With one of the latest updates, they just released Siri dictation, even for email and password fields, which is phenomenal. Because, you know, you used to have to use the touchpad you were just talking about to swipe. It's the way they had done it, which I guess this is the best way to do basically typing with just a trackpad. They had a string from A to Z of all the letters. And then, you know, you had a couple of switches at the bottom where you could switch it to uppercase or lowercase or symbols. And so you would just have to scroll by swiping across the entire thing, you know, to type out whatever you needed. If you're searching something like YouTube or Netflix, you know, you can usually get it with about a word or something like that. So it's not too big a deal. But if you have to do phrases or passwords, it's horrible because it just takes forever. But now you can just hold down the Siri remote, Siri button on the remote, and just tell it, you know, capital T, lowercase a, N, K, and then it'll just, it'll know.
Man, you're not supposed to tell people my password. That's cool. Have you guys played any games on it? I remember that was big news that there were going to be games on it. How is it?
I like some of the games. Some of the games are super gimmicky, as you, I'm sure, would expect. But some of them are pretty neat. Crossy Road, although it's, you know, you can get it on the iPhone. It's a lot more fun on the Apple TV, I think. And it makes for a really great party game. Like we've been over at people's houses with large groups of just downline folks and stuff very often this year. And oftentimes I will just grab the Apple TV remote and start Crossy Road. And basically you just pass the remote whenever you die. And it's really fun. People get really intense and into it. And it makes for a good party game.
Nice.
But I think some of the more intense games like Rayman Adventures is one that I found that's pretty good. I mean, as far as you'd expect from a non-console game, I like it.
Cool.
A lot of the typical side scrollers and, you know, endless climb to the top games that you might expect. But there's some gems out there. So Apple TV is a set-top box. Tank, do you have, I know you don't have an Apple TV, but do you have any kind of set-top box?
The closest thing I have is a Chromecast, which was a tech you should use a while back ago.
Yeah, it is. Chromecast is pretty similar to Apple TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, it doesn't have apps itself, but a lot of apps have support for it. So you just plug it into the HDMI port of the TV, and then you open your Netflix app and say, Chromecast, cast to the living room. So you don't actually have it on the TV and a remote for the TV. You just use your phone and the apps that support it. So it's pretty cool.
Nice.
YouTube works as well, and many others. Spotify.
I got a free Chromecast from a company I worked for once, and I played around with it. It was pretty fun. But I have all Apple stuff, so it was easier to choose the Apple TV.
Yeah, it makes sense.
The AirPlay thing is pretty amazing. They had that on the old generation, but still, it's awesome.
And that is similar to Chromecast, right? Like, you're basically playing what's on your phone on the TV?
Well, sort of. You can actually share your screen, which I don't know if Chromecast has that yet. But you can, like, instead of sharing a specific app, so you can mirror your entire screen on either a MacBook or an iPhone or an iPad.
That's cool. Yeah, you can do it on desktop, but not on a phone.
That's cool. Yeah, you can share a Chrome tab, right?
You can share a whole desktop now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, everyone should get an Apple TV, because they're great. Well, maybe not everyone. If you have Apple products, you should probably get an Apple TV. I don't know if, Tank, you should get an Apple TV.
Yeah, I won't. But I bet it'll be great.
Yeah. That is the tech you should use this week. All right, so let's get into our main topic this week. This week, Tank and I had a chance to sit down and just nerd out about programming, and everyone will get a chance to see how much of a nerd we both are, and how much smarter than me Tank is, especially when it comes to programming. So I hope you enjoy this little chat. Okay, Tank, it's just me and you this week.
Yep.
We're going to do developer-y things.
Yep.
Are you coding right now?
Right now, like at this moment?
Yeah.
It could be.
Do you want to? Let's code while we talk about coding.
That would be a lot of silence. I get my mechanical keyboard, so for louder clicks, maybe the experts around us would be able to figure out which keys I'm pressing from the sound of the click. Have you heard of the Twitch TV has live coding now?
No, that sounds awesome, though.
Yeah?
I don't know. Let me think about that. Would I be interested in that, actually? Do they narrate at all?
Yeah, I've never watched it, but apparently they just sit and code, and then they try to talk about what they're doing for one, but also just make jokes, and people are, as Twitch usually does, people are talking in the chat, and so they respond to those people.
Yeah. No, I think that might be interesting, depending on, you know, the narration part. Just kind of the context that they give you around what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, if it's something that I'd be interested in, like if I wanted to do video game programming and found someone who's making a game from scratch, then you could just watch him build it, ask questions as he's going.
That would be cool. Twitch should do something like Reddit. You know how they have the AMAs, the Ask Me Anythings with like famous people?
Uh-huh.
They should do that with like professional coders or like people who work for Pixar or I don't know, something like that. That Pixar's a bad example, I guess.
That'd be cool.
But yeah, I mean, sort of the same genre, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A friend of mine also suggested, whenever he was talking about that, said Twitch develops Pong. So like Twitch plays Pokemon, except for whatever they vote for types a letter and eventually try to build Pong. I think it wouldn't work ever.
But yeah, I don't think so.
Until everyone got bored except for one guy. It's like, vote for A. And he's the only one to vote.
So what is it you're up to now in your programming life? You can talk about your job if you want or your hobbies.
Let's see. Trying to think of what's more interesting. I guess at my job, I've started PowerShell scripting.
Oh, really? Why are you getting into that?
Because we switch branches a lot for like code reviews on Git. So we have, for those non-programmers out there, we'll have to try to make a little more sense of these things.
Yeah.
So basically everyone has a copy of code and they're all in different places. And sometimes we jump to what's on Bob's computer and then jump to what's on Joe's computer. Mm-hmm. And then I can edit it. But it's all on my computer. So essentially they can be very separate. And whenever everything shifts to a whole different set of code, you have to get everything working again. And so anyway, I found that PowerShell, for those who may know a little bit more, I can script out stuff to do a lot of the manual work I have to do. So sometimes I like delete the database, rebuild it, set up my config from the test, another one. And so I've, one of our coworkers, Joshua, he sometimes listens, is really good at PowerShell. And so I started sniffing around his scripts and then writing my own. And it's been really fun. I've been like, man, I could write PowerShell scripts to like set up a workstation or so. Like, I'm going to record this podcast. I could write a script that opens up Skype, opens up Audacity, starts a new project with the number I have, and just like does all the work for me with one button. So I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, I haven't done too much scripting recently. I've been doing a lot of front end stuff. Have you been doing Git basically exclusively at this point?
Yeah, yeah.
This new job, they use Git pretty much exclusively, mm-hmm. And so I've had to learn it. And I came from TFS, which is, again, for non developers, TFS is Microsoft's product for, I guess, source control, which is just different. You know, you have code and you have different branches of the code. So you could have like kind of version history and different feature sets are in different places so that you're not kind of writing all over each other type of thing. But anyway, TFS is what I used pretty much exclusively. Yeah, it was exclusively at Philips. And then when I changed jobs, now I'm using Git. And so that transition has been kind of interesting. Hmm. A lot of Git folks really love command line Git,
mm-hmm.
like Git bash, or, you know, like on the Mac, I think it's like iTerm Pro or something like that. I don't know. There's like a lot of advanced terminal clients, and I've never been really big on scripting because in my mind, it's like, if I can use a GUI for it and it'll take care of all of the nitty gritty stuff for me, like IntelliSense is super helpful, stuff like that. And then I can get to the part that I actually enjoy. Then that's always easier for me. So I sort of lean that way, but
mm-hmm.
that's been a bit of a new thing, sort of challenge thing that I've had to overcome in the last couple months. But
so have you looked into GUIs for Git?
Yeah. So I've been using one that I really like called Git Kraken,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, you've heard of it?
Yeah. I've used it a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I like it. I think it's designed very well, which is pretty nice because I feel like in a Git client, you don't usually have a nice looking UI. It's just mm-hmm. kind of a visual representation of what happens in the command line. And then, you know, that sort of the lowest level is just you're writing script in the command line, which yeah. fires off whatever you're doing. But I've used SourceTree also, which is an Atlassian product. But lately I've been using Git Kraken, and I like that. It's got a lot of good, like in the tree flow, it has, you know, even just colors to match every branch. Mm-hmm. And it has a really detailed view of like all the commits and stuff, which is super helpful for just scrolling through all that.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're good at like the, looks better than SourceTree.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're good at the Git logs and stuff like that, just, you know, searching and all that, then it's not as big a deal. But I mean, I didn't know the Git command line, so it's been really helpful for me.
So yeah, I like Git Kraken a lot when I've used it, but I've used SourceTree for so long now, it's hard to switch over because it's like, yeah. Oh, I want to do this, but I don't remember how, or I don't know how in Git Kraken, so I'm just going to switch to SourceTree. Same reason why I can't get to the command line. It's like, oh, I want to do something really easy, but I don't remember the command for it. So I'll just open up SourceTree.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how I am too. You're on Windows, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they gave us Macs.
Nice.
And we use Parallels. But since I'm doing, you know, all of my experience with previous company was in .NET. So they hired me on to do .NET. And then, you know, most of our new projects are going to be Rails. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be ramping up on Rails soon. which I'm excited about, probably in the next few weeks or months, which will be really fun. It's very different from .NET from what I've heard, you know, because it's C-based rather than Java. C-sharp is Java-based.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't know much at all about Ruby.
Yeah, I mean, I don't either, but a lot of our new apps, apparently it's easier to stand up a fresh app in Ruby than it is to in .NET. Because, you know, you got a lot of, like, there's a lot of overhead with framework files and things like that on the .NET side.
Uh-huh. So. Yeah, they're, so we watched Build, and apparently, so as a lot of people probably know, .NET is open source now. And anyway, there are a group of people who are using it for game development, the ASP.NET .NET server. And so anyway, since it's open source, these people who are making the game really needed a lot of, needed it to be faster. And so they went in and did a lot of performance analyzation and performance tuning. And now apparently it's even faster than Node.js server, which Node was known for being crazy fast, I think. So yeah, I mean, as far as actually building an application, it's probably slower. But whenever it's actually running, apparently it's faster now. So I thought that was crazy, because it's .NET is known for being really slow because it has to pull in all these files.
Yeah.
But the way they're doing it now, I think, is just you only pull in exactly what you need. So, yeah.
It's going to be pretty neat.
Yep. Is there a scripting language for Mac? Like I mentioned PowerShell, and that's pretty much Microsoft's.
Yeah, script. They have, I forget what it's called. You can write, like, I think they have, it's called AppleScript, I'm pretty sure. I haven't really messed around with it too much on the Mac side.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for it right now. Yeah, you can write. I have one script file that I use a lot, which is on, this is so weird and nitpicky, and people are going to think I'm just really weird, but it's true. Whenever you have a new file on Mac, if you create it or save it to your computer, you always see the extension. On Windows, it's by default, it's hidden.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up on Windows and hated Mac. And then in college, I switched to Mac. And I have always hated that you can see the extension. I don't know why. It just bugs me. So I have an Apple script file that I can drop files onto, and it'll hide the extension automatically.
Interesting.
And so you can drop a whole folder onto it, and it'll hide all the extensions in that folder. So, I don't know. I mean, it's like totally unnecessary, but it just bugs me, so.
Huh. So do you have to create, like if you create a new file in a doc in a folder that's already, has everything gone, do you have to get that file ran through the script as well?
What do you mean? I didn't follow you.
So I don't know the main folders, but like the downloads folder. Mm-hmm. If you've ran the downloads folder through your script and nothing is showing its extension, and then you download something new, do you have to run it again?
Yes. Yeah, you would on that one file. You can drop a folder on it and it'll run on every file in the folder. Mm-hmm. But then if you were to add something new, yeah, you would have to drop that file on it again.
Gotcha.
But it's a cool drag and drop interface, because you can just, it's basically, it looks like an app, the script does. And so if you drop any, you know, anything, even another application on it, it'll run it, the hide extension method on, it's not a method, but it'll run the script to do it on whatever you drop on it, which is cool.
Gotcha.
That's super easy to use. Yeah.
I turn it on for Windows, so I see my extensions, yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I don't know why, I just have never liked it, and I don't know, it was like years ago when I first did that, and I've just done it ever since. So I would love to talk about something specifically with programming.
Mm-hmm.
It's called imposter syndrome. Have you heard of this?
I have heard of it.
Okay. Have you ever felt it?
I'd say off and on, not so much as, constantly.
Like, yeah.
But just some days more than others.
Yeah. So for people who don't know, imposter syndrome is basically, you know, you're in a conversation, you're on a project, you're doing something, and you don't feel like you should be there because of, you don't know enough, or, you know, you're not, you don't have enough experience with it, or whatever it is. So you kind of feel like an imposter, in the group or on the project or whatever it is. And programmers talk about this a lot. I listen to several programming podcasts and it seems to always come up. You know, when somebody's ramping up on a new language or getting onto a new project or something like that, a lot of the times the conversation around imposter syndrome happens again. When I first came into this new job, I felt it really bad because I work with some really awesome and smart and really good developers. And so like I've learned a ton even in just the last few months that I've been there. So it's been really good. But it's like, you know, at first there's always that like paranoia that, oh man, what if I actually don't know what I'm talking about and I just sound like I do enough that these guys believe me? And so it's like, man, I don't know. I have to, you know, we've talked about it before in terms of like, you know, only 1% of people start a podcast about stuff or things like that. Do you remember that conversation?
Like we talked about it on our own in Slack.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do remember talking about that a long time ago.
Yeah. It's kind of like, what do you do when you feel imposter syndrome, Tank?
What do I do?
Yeah.
I hope it goes away the next day.
That's funny.
Yeah, I don't know. Yesterday even I told one of my coworkers, I was like, man, I'm useless today. And then I told Michelle the same thing when I got home because I just mentioned that script. I wrote out a whole script and was super proud of it and posted it in our work Slack. And then immediately following realized the script didn't work at all. And I had used some of my actual work time on it. And I was like, man, I just wasted that time and felt like a failure and everything. But then today at lunch, I fixed it. So
nice. So
that's why I say just wait a day for me.
But, yeah. Well, I think with some personality types too, it's, maybe some people are more prone to it. Like I think, I don't know about you, but I have kind of an achiever personality type where I like to get things done, like to make to-do lists, like to check things off the to-do lists. You know, there's people who make to-do lists and forget about them. And then there's people who make to-do lists and get this weird sense of just awe whenever they get to check something off, and especially whenever they get to check everything off. And I'm one of those people. And so it's like, you know, whenever you sort of have the temptation of being paralyzed whenever you have imposter syndrome of like, man, I don't know enough and I'll never know enough. I can't do anything. It's like the irrationality of it. But yeah, I don't know. I just think that personality type is a bad fit for it, or maybe a good fit for it, depending on how you want to take that.
So what do you do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I ask a lot of questions is the first thing I do. I convinced myself early on after getting some, so this was years ago in my first job, after getting some feedback about just not being afraid to ask questions of people. Because, you know, there are like senior guys around you and even like just peers, mid-level guys who kind of are right sort of in step with your experience and knowledge base and things like that. And it's not like nobody really takes it as, man, he should know this and he doesn't. What an idiot. Or like, we need to get rid of this guy. It's never about that, because, you know, they probably feel the same thing to some extent. And so it's just like convincing myself that I can ask questions. And I think it's something that I've seen in my life significant growth in, because now I process a lot through asking questions. And so, you know, I'm very prone to ask a lot of questions and try to get to the heart of the issue, or try to figure out what the communication breakdown is or what we need to get next. And so just kind of learning those sort of business analyst skills almost, where it's like you're trying to figure out what are the requirements here that I actually need to code? What is it you're looking for? And just getting more information usually helps right off the bat.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think another thing of what you're saying, from what you're saying, that I think could combat imposter syndrome is realizing, like, especially in programming, that nobody's going to become great at every single aspect of programming, but everybody's going to have an aspect that they love and are good at. And so maybe we're terrible at this piece, but that's okay because we like say the back end and working with databases, but we're great at making things look pretty on the front end or something.
Yeah.
You know, or even kind of like what made me think of this is because you're saying you're really good at asking questions and analyzing things. Like that's a very important role for someone on the team to have, even if it's not 100% directly related to the programming.
Yeah.
To have someone who is good at programming and then great at getting down some of those analytical things. Like everyone's going to have their role on the team. But I think this goes into something I told one of my friends about spiritual gifts one time, is I would say one of my spiritual gifts is giving. And one time I mocked that gift. I was like, oh, how hard is it to write some numbers down on a piece of paper and sign it? Like, big deal. It's like, that's so hard. But then like 15 minutes later, it was a group of three or four of us that were talking. And I was like, I need to apologize mainly to God, but then also to you guys, because I just mocked the gift that God has given me. Like, this is a huge thing.
Mm.
And I just trashed it and said, I don't want this, God. I want something better. And then I was thinking through that, and it made me realize, like, you know, one thing that I really want is like the gift of evangelism, like being really good at evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
But people who are really good at evangelism, they're probably like, all I do is talk to people. And then I mean, Jesus comes up.
It's they totally are. That's exactly what they're like.
Yep. And so whenever we have a gift, it's so easy. We're just like, well, this is stupid easy. Why don't I have a different gift that's actually hard?
And yeah. So
they'd be like, I couldn't give. I have $1 billion and I'm afraid to give up any of it. What if I need it? And then it's the exact opposite. So.
Yeah, it's funny. We were in Matthew 5 and 6 in a Bible study that I just kind of became a part of recently with a guy who's discipling me and a bunch of his coworkers from a previous job. And we were actually, going through Matthew, and we were actually in Matthew 6, 5 and 6. But 6 is particularly relevant to this conversation because really what we're talking about is anxiety. You know, I'm afraid that people are going to judge me if I don't know enough. You know, for example, or maybe you're afraid that you don't have the right gifting, for example. I mean, I don't know if you'd say that, but just kind of as an example. Okay. And, and you know, I think about like Matthew 6 in the end of the chapter when, I mean, basically Jesus is just reminding us that God is our Father and that we are precious to God. Like he considers us sons and daughters, which is just amazing in and of itself. We could stop there and just be in awe for a few days or weeks, but even more that he acts as a result of that relationship, you know, and uses the comparison of birds having enough food to eat and lilies of the field looking beautiful, and that he's saying that God the Father does that, and that, you know, if he does that for birds and plants, how much more will he do that for us? And so then his conclusion is, you don't have to be anxious about anything because sufficient for the day is its own trouble. You know, that's sort of the end. And he talks about what we should do when we're anxious, which is seeking his kingdom and his righteousness, and that we can trust him to add everything else to us that we need. So if I were to re-answer your question about imposter syndrome, what I should do is preach the gospel to myself, because that's the only lasting source of acceptance, approval that I actually am craving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that definitely rings true for whenever, we are wanting approval. And I bet that is a lot of why we beat ourselves up. If we're more honest with ourselves, like we have some standard for ourselves that we feel like we're not reaching. So with gifts, like evangelism, I feel like I'm not evangelizing enough or something and I beat myself up, but I don't know necessarily if it may be a level of seeking approval from men, whether myself or my peers, that I can be like, yeah, I've seen 5 people come to Christ this week. And I can't say that because it's never happened. Instead of seeking approval from God and trusting him to bring those opportunities and put boldness in me, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and the tension with evangelism, too, is like man, I feel, because I've felt that too. It's like, oh, I should be sharing the gospel more. I'm not like, why haven't I seen anyone come to Christ in the last, I don't know, month or whatever it is, right? And then it's like, okay, I need to share the gospel just so I'll stop feeling shame about it. It's like, that's not the answer either. So, yeah. You know, then you're kind of at sort of the, at the other end of the spectrum, which is not a good place to be either. So it's tough. Do you think, I don't know if this is my inner lawyer or not. But sometimes I think, man, with the industry I'm in, you know, like specifically with programming, and just technology in general, there's so much growth so quickly over such a short period of time, even. You know, I think about, like, especially in the JavaScript world, which I've gotten really involved into some Angular screens on this project I've been working on for the last few months.
Mm-hmm.
And previously it had been all just sort of vanilla ASP.NET MVC, you know, which I was very comfortable with. And so we just had some personnel changes. And so I'm picking up a piece that's all in Angular. And, you know, I have some exposure to that, but wouldn't say that I was, you know, even moderate or expertise at it, but maybe more amateur. And it's fun to do. I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, it's also very complex. And Angular is like not even a few years old, I don't think. I mean, it's pretty new on the scene.
Yeah.
And certainly in popularity, it may not be a newer technology, but it's being adopted very quickly, which is typical of JavaScript libraries. And so I just think about, you know, like, especially with programming, things change so much. How could any one person be expected to know everything there is to know about all these things, you know, and stay up on it? But I don't know if that's me just like making excuses, and that's a reality in every field, and I just don't know it because there's a hidden part of complexity to parts of the world I know nothing about, you know?
Now there is a, it's like a thing now, it's called like JavaScript fatigue or JavaScript framework fatigue or something. I can't remember what it's called, but yeah,
yep,
everybody's feeling that.
Yep.
There's even, have you ever seen commit strip?
I don't think so.
Commit strip is, it's a comic for coders. That should be one of my recos sometime. But anyway,
I don't know about this. This is a big gap in my knowledge.
The, oh yeah, nice.
You got the irony.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. There's a commit strip that's like, it's making JavaScript frameworks as a subway station. And it has like the stars on GitHub as and how many people are on it. But anyway, it has to the right, it has mutools canceled, prototype canceled, Angular 1, who knows, CoffeeScript slowing down, Backbone.js on time, Bootstrap on time and popular, Ember.js, yeah, new train coming, Meteor boarding, React crazy boarding, Angular 2, maybe late, maybe not. And that's just a small, small subset of a small subset. Because that's even, then you could get into mobile frameworks and all sorts of crazy stuff. Yeah.
Have you seen the future of programming webcomic?
Mm-mm.
Where it's like everything compiles to JavaScript?
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the end of all programming because everything just compiles down to JavaScript and then you run it in the browser.
Yep. Yeah, I have a friend who's very strong about that. And so he's, I told him, I'll just hang out in JavaScript. I like it. He's like, that's basically like saying you'll just hang out in assembly language.
Oh, gosh. Which, no, I do not see that connection at all.
Well, if everything compiles to Java, well, it's like everything compiles to assembly.
I mean, I get that. But if you spend any time in assembly, I feel like there's so much more headache there than in JavaScript.
Do you remember that class we had where we had to write some stuff in assembly?
Yes, I was just thinking about that. Oh, gosh. That was one of the hardest classes in college, I think.
Yeah, especially it wasn't helped by the fact that you and I planned to go to every other class.
Oh, gosh.
You would go to one, I would go to one.
Oh, man, that's funny.
Good times. But yeah, I really enjoy the JavaScript framework stuff, though. Whenever I think it's exciting, and I kind of have fun. I get really into making some app, whatever it is, and I go, "Ooh, I'm going to try out Angular for this app." and then the next step. And I don't ever finish them, but I'm just like, a new one. I'm going to try out React. And it's just, there's constant entertainment value because I can always try new things.
Yep. My side projects are a little bit less programming.
Like what?
Well, I, with a designer friend of mine who goes to my church, and we're actually becoming neighbors very shortly because a new house I bought's right next door to him. We recently redesigned our church's website, and you know, I got to go up on Sunday one morning and show it off to the congregation type of thing, just so that people would know about the resource and be able to go out there and use all the stuff on it. And ever since then, like, a lot of people have been saying, hey, I saw the Harvest website. Like, it looks really great. I was wondering if you'd be interested in helping me, like, create a website, which is awesome. Like, I'm really, like, glad to be able to use my gifting, like, professional gifting specifically in such a direct way to serve the body. Like, that's awesome. But it's also like, man, everyone wants a website. And it's like, they don't want web apps. Like, they don't need a bunch of Angular code. They just want something that looks pretty, you know, and is maybe a little bit interactive. And so I think there's going to be a lot more design work than development, but it's a new, sort of a new thing that we're talking through and trying to figure out what we want to do. And really exciting in that sense.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Do you have a name?
No. Ah, we've talked about some things. I'm not ready to go public with anything at this time. No, it's not really anything like legitimate yet, other than just two friends who make a good team and want to help people. So
cool.
And maybe make some spare money on the side.
And when you do, you all, the listeners, will start hearing, use discount code Tanks the Greatest for 10% off on a new website.
No, yeah. The discount code will be Super Mario PJs are awesome.
That worked too. It's anonymous.
Yeah.
And whenever I'm feeling imposter syndrome, I just put on my Super Mario PJs and everything's okay.
There it is. I think that's a wrap this week.
Great.
You guys got any recos this week?
Been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Just got to season 2 and it's been enjoyable.
I like that show.
Yeah, it's good. Lots of excitement and suspense. So Michelle's having a hard time not watching it. Like, it keeps ending on a cliffhanger and she's like, I want to know what happens. And I do too, but I just used her as someone to hide behind.
No, we're good. Enjoying you're it. You're in season 2?
On like episode 5.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
That is great. Well, check out Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's a good show.
Mm-hmm.
And if you would like to connect with us, you can jump in our Slack channel. It is by far the best way to get a hold of us. And we had some technical difficulties with Gmail this week where they were marking our website contact forms as spam. So if you logged into the website, or if you loaded up the website and sent a contact form email to us, we may not have gotten it. I found a bunch in spam and replied to the ones I saw, but apologies if your email got lost. We didn't intend that to happen. So jump in the Slack and chat with us.
And you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @TechReformation. We've also got a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TechReformation. And the website that Ben just mentioned, if you want to go and check out the tags to find past episodes by topic, is techreformation.com.
And also you can email us directly instead of using the website at ask@techreformation.com.
We are a part of the Theology Mix Network, and you can find the link to their website in the show notes, as well as their master iTunes feed, which has all 12 of their shows now. And we're really excited to be a part of it. They got some great content.
Don't forget to review us on iTunes and recommend us on Overcast or whatever other podcast app you use. Most of them have some kind of favoriting feature, so Definitely do that. And if you haven't left us a review on iTunes yet and you've been listening for a while, we'd really appreciate it if you could go and leave some stars and also some words to tell other people what you think of the podcast. Hopefully get some more listeners and spread the word. So really appreciate it if you could take some time out of your day to do that. That'd be great.
Our theme music is used by special permission of Matthew Parker. You can find his music on SoundCloud and iTunes. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.